Hello, my name is Colm O'Regan and welcome to episode 59 of the No Encore podcast, Headstuff's resident music show. I'm joined in studio today by Craig Fitzpatrick.
Am I just never going to get to do the intro now? I mean, Dave barely turns up anymore and still you're dominating that mic.
Still, I'm taking charge. Yes, Dave is not here.
No, Dave Core.
Did he take offence to your statement last week?
The timing is slightly strange, isn't it? It's kind of turning into quite the soap opera. I don't know. It sounded heartfelt. Some people listened back to the episode and told me it sounded kind of sarcastic. Either sarcastic or like I'd been forced to read it.
Right.
I don't know what they're talking about, to be honest. But yeah, Dave isn't here.
No. My guess is that he's going to be filling in for the Duke of Edinburgh in public appearances from now on.
See, I was thinking maybe he just did a Prince Philip and just decided to retire from his kind of public commitments altogether.
Sure.
You know, first festival is now just anything, really.
But, well, yeah, private soirees are still okay, I guess.
Private soirees, yeah. He loves a private soirees.
Yeah, or maybe he's trapped in an airport in the Bahamas. As many, many people found themselves this week. This basically is the sort of story why we started a podcast in the first place.
Yeah, Dave is missing out. Nice segue, by the way.
Thank you very much,
Dave. Ja Rule. I mean, everyone's...
It's excellent already. It's great already. I'm loving it.
It's the most relevant he's been since he was in that video playing basketball with Jay.
But you see, this is the thing. I don't even know if this has come up in the podcast before. Like, I love Ja Rule simply because he was born on a leap year on February 29th.
So he's like 5 years old.
He's 10, yeah. He was jailed at 9.
Was this his birthday party that he was throwing?
No, it would be late for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
the 11th is coming up in 2020. And boy, if this was anything to go by, it's going to be some session.
Yeah, I haven't worked out their Gregorian calendars yet. But yeah, I mean, everyone must have heard of this kind of weekend of fire.
Yeah, that went fire down, festival.
I think we need a deep dive on this.
Yeah, so it was organised by Ja Rule and Billy McFarland, who himself isn't much over 10. I think he's 25 years old.
Yeah. What's a 25-year-old doing hanging around with Ja Rule to try and get a foot on the ladder?
I think the old quick buck argument can be used here.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically it has been compared to the Hunger Games or the Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. I mean, in the kind of advert for this festival, it was talking about... elite millennials mixing with influencers. So it's just fantastic that they've been reduced to like essentially being stranded on Ireland where they had bare rations, I think is the term. And as we also heard, literally bread, cheese and salad dressing.
Mm-hmm. Yet there was pretty much no shelter, what all small clusters of FEMA tents is what they've been compared to, exposed on a sandbar, soaked and battered by wind and rain. Now, obviously, it kind of, grew legs in the aftermath, and people on Twitter and Reddit just being like, no, did anyone hear gunshots? Which I don't think was happening. But it does sound like a deeply unpleasant situation.
It sounds horrible. They actually, like, some pretty big acts were supposed to play. So Ja Rule obviously has some pull still. Disclosure, mm-hmm. Migos, Major Lazer. So it seemed like, Bahamas. I mean, you're talking about staying in apparently luxury villas.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets were going for between $1,000 and $125,000. So just ridiculously off the scale. And what they were left to it was just an absolute shambles. And yeah, the kind of deep dive and the kind of, raking over the muck kind of crap has been amazing. Just people that actually worked with it. And, several weeks ago, they were told that, listen, this is going to take a year and 50 million to make happen. Just like postpone it.
Yeah, there's an amazing piece on New York Magazine, actually.
Well, my favorite line is when they're being told all of this and they still have enough time to kind of go, we'll do it next year, it'll be fine. A guy from the marketing team said, let's just do it and be legends, man. And that night at a party, Ja Rule announced, he gave a big toast to living like movie stars, partying like rock stars and fucking like porn stars. I'm shocked this went belly up.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if somebody told me that their birthday party was being organised by Ja Rule, I'd be worried.
Yeah.
If somebody told me that, some luxury getaway that I'd paid $100,000 for was organised by Ja Rule, No.
The best bit is that he was staying on some like private yacht just off the kind of mainland where this was happening. It's just like uncontactable.
Now, I mean, like, my favorite reaction to this, by the way, when you're talking about people hitting Twitter, was somebody saying that it sounds like something that Tom and John Raffio would have organized as a publicity stunt for Entertainment 720 on Parks and Rec, which is so true. I mean, failed festivals are nothing strange because, like, we've seen, like, Killarney Festival go belly up here a few years ago where it was like, we've got 30,000 tickets. And then a week before, they were like, well, now it's 5.
Yeah.
And then Duran Duran pulled out and it was like, okay, there's no festival. We're sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough thing to pull off, I'm imagining, just the logistics. But when you're Ja Rule just going, it'll be fine, and it's this like level of luxury in the Bahamas.
Yeah, and it's also when you've got like the Jenners and Bella Hadid and all the rest kind of bigging it up.
Kendall's having a terrible time with her associations recently.
One can only presume she was wandering around handing out Pepsis to make everything better.
Oh, yeah. I think, like, the whole, you know, let's just be legends and do it anyway. We're probably assuming it's just going to be, like, some Spike Island happening. Yeah. But it wasn't, you know, like, pilled up Scally Manx just arriving. It was, you know, elite millennials.
Yes. And now they've promised that they're going to be refunded and have free tickets to a VIP
and apparently, like,
soiree on the mainland of the United States next time.
The people that were supposed to be there or were there and just stranded were kind of surveyed. And, like, something like over 80% are like, yeah, we'll go. I suppose if it's free, but wouldn't you be kind of like, I don't want to, like, I'm risking life and limb to go through this kind of thing.
I wonder as well, like, there's a 100 million class action suit that the organisers are facing. If people actually turn up to that replacement festival, I imagine that suit just dies, right? You can't really have huge grounds for, like, you know, it was incredibly damaging until the replacement festival, at which point it was fine.
But as I say, I mean, Ja Rule hasn't been this relevant since... I always get that Jennifer Lopez and that Ashanti song mixed up.
Living It Up.
Yeah.
I reckon that was later, yeah.
Okay, well, you know, this might just be good for his career, I don't know.
We'll see what happens. Elsewhere, obviously we on this podcast have been bigging up Frank Ocean, well, since we started. And long before it, for that matter.
Frank, yeah.
Brad Pitt has been the latest to jump on that particular bandwagon. I've always felt myself and Brad Pitt are very alike. And yeah, it turns out that he dealt with his...
It's the chin, I think.
Yeah, he dealt with his breakup from Angelina Jolie by drinking heavily, and I can say tick to that. And then listening to Frank.
This is your experience of breaking up with Angelina Jolie, is it? Yeah,
it happened pretty much exactly the same.
Well, I mean, he's been talking about the breakup happening because of his drinking, but also, yeah, a very kind of typical breakup period where he's just been listening to a lot of Frank.
Yeah. Bon Iver getting a bit of a spin as well.
Marvin Gaye's divorce record, which I don't know if you've heard it before. Here, my dear, it's an amazing record because literally he was ordered in court. Like, his wife wanted a certain amount of money, and part of the stipulation was that he had to record this album.
Oh, wow.
So it's called Here, My Dear, and it opens with like a really, really sarcastic kind of like, I did this just for you, it's what you wanted, and it carries on that like barbed horrible fashion, and it sounds amazing.
Also, are these on Brad Pitt's sarcastic days then? He listens to Marvin Gaye and
in between his sculpting. Apparently he's doing a lot of working with his hands and sculpting, because, you know, that's what tortured artists do.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, to be fair though, if you're going through a divorce, Frank Ocean, Bon Iver, they're both very solid choices, I feel.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, presumably when he was like breaking up with Jennifer Aniston, he was stuck with like Boys to Men or something, I don't know.
What was the time period?
I don't know, but like early to mid 2000s, I would think.
Yeah, I think he was just hanging out with Angelina, to be
honest. Yeah. I was trying to cover his back there, sorry.
Yeah.
What are your breakup tunes? Like, if you have to cry in the dark.
I don't know. I just never get involved with a long-term relationship, I guess. That's why I love pop music, because it's, you know, you just kind of can listen to a song for 3 minutes and then there's no commitment and you can just walk away.
That's a safe get-out.
Yeah, that's a comparison I'm making with relationships there. Let's not go any further.
Let's not, no.
My damaged psyche.
Let's dive into the pop world. Justin Bieber's rider for a gig in India hit headlines. Frankly, I think just because it's Justin Bieber, because there's nothing too ridiculous on here, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, when I heard Yoga Casket, I immediately thought, what is he into? Like, I'm thinking of all those kind of like Tibetan things where they actually, you know, take drugs that renders you kind of completely rigor mortis and you go into it. Like, I was like, Jesus, Justin is getting into some deep, deep stuff in the search of like the perfect pop song. But no, it's just some like essential oils and incense.
I think it's just a typo for basket, to be honest.
A container, yeah.
So like, you can really only be done on the cultural appropriation end of that rather than the sort of...
I mean, you're kind of right in that it's probably just news because it's Justin. Like, it's kind of stuff you would expect. I mean, a jacuzzi.
Yeah.
When you think of how much his tours are raking in, the world tour has grossed close to $200 million. It's not a lot to ask for, like, a wardrobe cupboard or a massage table.
He wants a PlayStation, a ping pong table, sofa set, washing machine, a fridge. That's all reasonable.
Yeah, although when you hear of him like descending on India, it's a bit like, what is he, like the kind of viceroy of the, you know, British Raj or
something.
He's
stuff.
Carried
yeah.
in on a carpet, yeah, yeah.
The one that caught my eye, though, was top culinary experts will supervise a gourmet being served to Bieber over the 4 days, with five dishes per day being renamed after his popular songs. And now... As I say, I mean, I assume this just means like there's going to be, you know, five dishes on five different tables with each table labeled like, you know, this is what do you mean and this is sorry. But I'd like to think it's going to be more complex than that, Craig.
What do you mean?
That's why I've made 10 dishes that you can make from Justin Bieber songs. You've got... Beauty.
Now, hold on. I would like to say off the top, you haven't made these dishes, so
no,
I'm quite
no,
disappointed.
No. I'm not like an
You've come up with titles. I'm getting
made
no
earlier.
Free food. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how many of these you truly want. We'll see.
I want them all.
You can tell me as we go.
Come on.
Beauty in a beetroot salad.
Good. Solid.
Kiss and Taleggio chicken.
You could end there. I mean, that's not going to be beaten.
I would fired pizza.
Oh, that's a bit hot pressy.
As long as you love miso soup.
That's a bit go-rail.
I mean, never let you goji berry oatmeal cookies.
All right, stop. That's enough. No, go on.
There's
more. Go on.
Love yourself, Selfridge's own brand pizza.
Oh, fucking hell. Go on.
Wait for a minute, steak.
Yeah.
Let me love Yumi Boshi plums.
Just sounds wrong.
I know.
Read that one again. No, don't read it again.
Yellow rain, Cotel de Cameron.
The accent, I mean, really put us out of our misery.
I know.
Are we halfway through? Or
we're almost done. Amritsari naan bread is the last one. Sorry.
Save the best to last. Some of those were actually almost good.
Yeah.
I was trilling.
And if there's any Indian chefs listening who are preparing Justin's food throughout his tour, feel free. I will not charge.
Justin would love those.
For those names.
Yeah, so in terms of kind of grand artistic statements delivered through various media, I'm sure Jaden Smith would have loved your creative endeavours there. My segues just aren't as good, are they?
Jaden Smith, amazing though, when you talk about, yeah, like media statements. Like, have you seen his Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, not for a while because my mind was too blown.
I mean, oh yeah. Your mind does get blown frequently. It's the capitalization that does me, though. It's insane.
It's because he's through the looking glass, right? And he knows that lowercase just won't cut it in this, you know, matrix. One big fan of Jaden is Fall Out Boy's Pete Wentz.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he's trying to stay Ja Rule, i.e. relevant, by just name-checking Jaden, or he really truly believes that Jaden Smith could be the next Nirvana.
Well, this is the thing. I had a poke around yesterday and I couldn't actually find any history of them like being boys or hanging out or anything like, so maybe he is just a fan, or maybe it was the first name that popped into his head when he was looking for an example.
Yeah, I mean, it's a greater point going on here.
Yeah, this is basically Pete Wentz saying, like, you know, you know, people say, like, you know, there's going to be no new Nirvana, but, you know, there will be. It just won't be in rock necessarily. It'll be someone like Jaden Smith, or that it's going to be a genre killer that came from nowhere. So basically, this is Pete Wentz joining in the kind of rock is dead brigade.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking about one of the songs coming up later, Young and Menace. And Pete Wentz is what age by now? I mean, he's good.
Mid-30s, I would say.
Young and Menace. This, like, one of his quotes here is, hip-hop is super exciting for kids. I'll be looking at my Snapchat on Coachella, and that is rock and roll right
now.
Oh,
yeah. That sounds like something I would train my dad to say.
Yeah, I think it's time for him to move on.
Yeah, either way, we'll be getting to Fall Out Boy, new track, in just a couple of minutes' time. A brief story that caught the eye, though, this morning is that the creator of The Wire has written a musical based on the Pogues.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Well,
in terms of grittiness.
Yeah, and I mean, as well, fans of The Wire will remember that it was a Pogue song that was used for the policeman's wake in that. It was Body of American when they were laid out in a snooker table. So, yeah, like, we know he's got history with the band, so to speak, at least as a fan. And, yeah, they've been talking about this play, which was commissioned by Druid Theatre, and apparently is going to be hitting Broadway sometime in the next year or two.
Yeah, and then, you know, eventually, if it's a success, it'll cross the Atlantic. It's actually the Pogue's Spider Stacy that has been talking about David Simon kind of bring this script to kind of its closing point. And he was asked as well, you know, would the band be involved? And I think quite tactfully he's like, well, you know, we've done some kind of filmy bits and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if us being like on stage reciting lines is going to be something that quite works with myself or Shane. Yeah,
that's very tactful.
I've heard stories of Shane McGowan's appearance on the set of Fair City, and I'll just say maybe it wouldn't have worked in front of a live audience.
Right.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
You can probably fill in the blanks, but yeah.
I can remember being backstage at Electric Picnic a couple of years ago and somebody dashing out from tent and going like, who knocked a speaker? It's like, Shane McGowan did, mate. Don't say anything. Right, let's double back to Fall Out Boy as we move to Songs of the Week. Sure. This is the aforementioned Young and Menace. Right, so we are still months away from the album, apparently. That won't be out until September, but this is the first thing taken from it. Dave has been in touch to say he's a fan, but his opinion does not matter today.
We've been receiving edicts from, you know, on high.
On high.
I really think you guys should talk about this track. It's super exciting for the kids,
to
paraphrase.
I mean, fair enough, like the Britney nod is neatly done, I think.
Yeah, I kind of... I mean, it's, you know, it's Pete Wentz lyrically, you know, comparing himself to Nikki Sixx in terms of, you know, passing away due to, you know, the rock and roll lifestyle, which is now nearly all over. Yeah, it interpolates Britney Spears. It does those kind of screwed up chipmunk vocals on what is ostensibly the hook. It kind of works.
Yeah, it kind of does. Yeah. I mean, like, there's the occasional little flourish that's a bit ropey. Like, there's a bit that sounds like, you know, when you have your phone too close to a speaker when you're getting a phone call and you get that sound.
Yeah.
It's got one of those.
Yeah.
But it's all right. And, like, I mean, it's a fun song. And the transitions actually are really well done, considering that it's one that kind of goes from 0 to 90.
They've been a band that have kind of, you know, obviously punky, you know, US mainstream punky roots. But then obviously made it quite big, and just because of those kind of pop melodies Patrick Stumpkin turn out. And since they kind of crossed over, they've been kind of chasing fads a bit.
Yeah.
And they've been trying to kind of, okay, we're going to bring in some hip hop. Maybe that's a little unfair. Maybe it's just them trying to expand their palette. And while I haven't always been like, oh, I'm going to be listening to this forever, it's never completely horrible because I think they've enough of a kind of sense of humour about it. And do you know what I mean? They kind of get away with it. Because
yeah, and
just
I
like,
think
ah.
they understand as well that, frankly, if they can rap something in a hook,
yeah,
you know, it's not going to be eminently dislikable.
Yeah, like I think Patrick Stump does a really good job of taking some dude's poetry, essentially, and kind of pop culture references and, you know, melding it to a tune. I mean, it's not quite as difficult as James Dean Bradfield in Mannix kind of trying to get this ridiculous, you know, very right on stuff into something approaching a, you know, a charting song. Mm. But he does it quite well, even if I'm not a super fan of his voice.
Yeah.
Sort of bit.
No,
lacking
think that's
in
fair.
Subtlety or something, maybe.
Yeah.
But I can totally listen to this and I will happily listen to this. And it's a fun song.
A couple of those same comments could probably be aimed at the new one from Chuck Chuck Chuck. This is called Dancing is the Best Revenge. Yeah. yeah, the group that less experienced music journalists would pause and go, hang on, how do I pronounce this? They are kind of doing what they always do, but maybe a little better.
Yeah, you see, I'm not hugely familiar with these guys because I've just... I don't know. I've just missed a lot of their stuff. They've been around for what, about 2 decades
this
doing
is it.
This dance
I couldn't
punk
believe
thing.
This is 7th album yeah. is what this is taken from. That's out in a couple of weeks' time.
I wanted to kind of find out a bit more about them, so I typed in Chuck Chuck Chuck. Do you know what? You would think, okay, difficult to pronounce, but at least when you type it into Google, there's no one else going to have that name. Google doesn't recognize yep. it. You cannot find one document on this band through the world's biggest search engine. That's kind of punk. I was wondering, what's the punk aspect of this dance punk?
I think the punk is purely their un-Googleability, yeah.
Yeah, and also it's kind of disco, but with a few guitars. I suppose that's what they're getting at. But I really like this, I have to say.
I really like it too. I mean, I must say, I do think the song was probably written by someone coming in going like, guys, check out this hook. And it's like, okay, well, what about the verses? No, 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 but listen to the hook.
Yeah.
Like, what do we do for an intro? No, but seriously, the hook, right?
But it's a really good hook.
It's great.
It's irresistible. And it's a bit of an anthem. I mean, even lyrically, it's very strong. It's kind of a call to the dance floor, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I don't hit too many dance floors unless they're wedding dance floors. It's not really a call to a wedding dance floor, which is my life now. but other kind of, you know, cooler, edgier, hipper bars that you and Dave frequent.
Yeah,
remind me. Imagine the two of you dancing to this at 2 a.m.
Myself and Dave dancing at 2 a.m.
It's been known to happen.
Glad those nights have not stuck in my memory by any means. Yeah, it reminds me like Chromeo or something.
Yeah.
Also reminds me of LCD Sound System a little bit, who apparently are going to be releasing music after we're finished recording this podcast.
I mean, this is kind of the perils of recording on a Thursday night when everyone releases stuff about 3 hours later.
Yeah. At least we still have this to talk about though, Craig. Katy Perry has released the second single from her new album. It's called Bon Appetit. And it sounds like this. We spread like a buffet. Bon appetit, baby. Appetite for seduction. Fresh at the oven. Melting my mouth kind of loving. Bon appetit, baby. I'm gonna let you start.
I'm gonna let you finish. This is a bit ridiculous as songs go, isn't it? I mean, lyrically,
ridiculous does not cover this.
The euphemisms, Colin.
I can't
Let's
believe
talk
this
about
happened.
Euphemisms. I feel like the kind of nods and innuendo coupled with food stuffs has been done to death, and it should never have been done to begin with. Maybe a few Prince references from the 80s, but that should have been it.
I mean, like, she kind of exhausted the candy references from California Girls, but that was still a good enough song.
I don't understand what she was talking about on that song.
Hold it up, but well, this...
I mean, the hook's kind of all right. It works enough for me that I don't hate it. Something terrible.
Craig, I hate this.
Do you really hate
I
it?
Hate this. I mean, people are going to assume that, like, I'm trying to fill in for Dave in the angry corner with a bit of a rant here. But, like, I can't believe that... Like, however many people must have given this a thumbs up. I mean, it's produced by Max Martin, who's capable of, you know, doing some of the best stuff in the world. And then he comes up with this.
See, I didn't know that, but it kind of makes sense to me because it has proper form and it has enough of a hook that I think it isn't a total waste of time. But it's awful.
Like, if somebody had told me that this was the new single for the fast food rockers to come back for a mature audience, I'd be like, yeah, okay, maybe that's the only way this song could exist.
Are her singles now just based around themes that she can kind of design, you know, costumes for whatever is dancing on stage?
I have no idea. Like, she was the one herself who came out a couple of months ago and used the phrase purposeful pop for what she was trying to create.
Okay.
The idea of it not being fully new, but, like, at least that phrase I hadn't heard before. And then you've got this. Like, I'm spread like a buffet. Sorry, love, I'm not hungry anymore.
Yeah.
I was really hoping for a rhyming couplet that was just like, you know, go on, baby, eat my trash. Would you like some fries with that?
This isn't going to be a whole list you've been working
no,
on.
No, it's not.
You should have combined this with the fucking Bieber stuff, man.
I was hoping the Migos were going to drop on those rhymes. Like, you know, Quavo like mentioned like sweet potato pie, and it's like, what does it have marshmallows stuck in it?
I was going to say, I mean, they've been on such a hot streak and they just can't do anything with this, man. It's amazing. I think they're on a bunch of songs that are literally all dropped around the same like couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah, it was as though there was a cutoff for Song of the Summer applications.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously we just know at this point Calvin Harris is dominating the summer. Yeah. Which I never thought I'd say.
I know, right?
Big Calvin and Big Ja Rule are dominating this summer, folks.
So Migos will get away with it, but Katy Perry, this man...
Yeah, like, as I say, I don't hate the vibe off it, like, sonically. There's a kind of throwaway old school Madonna thing to it. It's probably aiming for some of the kind of cheeky stuff that I think Charlie XCX does really well in her last playlist slash mixtape But yeah, it's not quite there.
It's far from it for me, to be fair. Yeah,
lyrics are distracting.
Pop juggernaut to another, though. Big Harry Styles is back. Single number two from him as a solo artist. It's called Sweet Creature. Let's take a listen.
Sweet creature, had another talk about where it's going wrong, but we're still young. We don't know where we're going, but we know we belong. No, we started two hearts in one home. It's hard when we argue.
So, Craig, you were absent when we talked about Sign of the Times, the debut single from the X One Direction member. This, obviously, is the follow-up. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, I mean, with this kind of 1-2, he's really setting out his stall as the credible, you know, musician that likes a bit of rock music and kind of heartfelt stuff. After the bombast of Sign of the Times, which just kind of ran completely hollow for me, this is something that is approximating something that I might like, but somehow doesn't quite work. I mean, the melody sounds to me like Gavin Glass's Older Than My Years, which is a great song. It just reminds me of that. It's completely coincidental. And then very clearly in terms of the approach and that just plucked guitar figure, I mean, it's a Beatles, Blackbird, you know, English Rose by The Jam kind of thing. Very much tapping into that lineage of, you know, British songwriters and sensitive stuff like that. And it doesn't coalesce as anything that is really meaningful to me. It's very lightweight.
That's exactly it. Like, it's so disappointing. I mean, last time I was defending him for Sign of the Times, where I said, like, you know, at least there seemed to be ambition. And like you say, a bit of bombast there, you know, that this wasn't kind of, I suppose, taking the easy way out. This is. And I mean, what really gets me is nothing will convince me that if you swung a cat at like an open mic down in Whelan's or something, you wouldn't hit five people who could do a song like this.
Yeah, well, this is very much the thing. And he seems like a charismatic dude in terms of, well, even in interviews, he doesn't have a huge amount to say, but he's kind of he's a star. He's got that certain quality. Yeah. So he's clearly going to be fine and going to make it, but just he strikes me as someone that doesn't really care a huge amount about music.
I kind of agree with you listening to this.
Maybe that's a very that is a very patronizing thing to say. Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Nonetheless, I mean, there is a level, and I'm not somebody who ever gets annoyed, you know, about these things and about other people's success, but you do kind of listen to this and say, does he deserve that sort of acclaim and stardom? I mean, you know, and I'm not saying one way or the other, you know, if it's good or bad, but I've no doubt that Gavin James, for instance, could write a song like this tomorrow in his sleep, and he will not have 100 million streams the following week or whatever it is that this song's going to do.
Yeah, and this isn't a track that, you know, Dear Al Harry's been working away on just in between kind of band practices, and it's something that really means something to him. I mean, it's a co-write with a dude who used to be a kind of folk artist called Kid Harpoon, I believe, and now is a Skrillex collaborator, so just crossing all the genres and knocking it out of the park. So yeah, it just kind of screams like a cynical approach to me. And even if it's not, and I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt, and it's probably not, as a listener that means nothing to me because I can't connect with it.
And the final thing as well is that it's moved him back dangerously close to the sort of Niall Horan territory that we've been critical of before.
They should team up, really.
They could make a boy band. Just get another couple of guys.
Take that or down to three. They could just slot right in there. Nah, I would never want to take that to mean like
take
that.
One Direction. Yeah, let's not. Final track that we're going to have a listen to today. Mac DeMarco. It's called One More Love Song. Sounds like this.
Turns out all you found is one more.
Yeah, single taken from his album, which is just out a day or two at this point. Some people would not have thought that he had this in him, to be fair, because it's melancholic and it's bluesy and it's pretty slow and relaxed.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty good.
It is very good. The thing about him is that he's got this image and all this noise that surrounds him, and he's got a kind of cliched white trash vibe going on. He's quite funny and out there, and you know, there's a lot of gimmicky stuff surrounding him. But actually, when you come back to the music, I mean, he's completely inseparable, just in my mind, with a Kurt Vile, because he does do this kind of, you know, probably spent his teen years listening to quite a bit of Stephen Malkmus, and now is doing maybe more of a less kind of ironic, more honest take on that kind of thing. It's that weird, you know, hazy guitar based thing, but actually there's a lot of kind of rock classicism under it, and a real kind of dedication to the craft of forming these songs. I mean, when you properly listen to them, these are well built, sturdy constructions, and they always sound great.
I think it's kind of the sentiment of a song like this that would have come as a surprise, because he is a kind of a goofy, you know, fun loving, like, as you say, just kind of like slacker rock sort of guy usually. Whereas this has the sound of like a kind of a smoky room and you know, a bloke down on his luck in the corner sort of thing, which is certainly not where you'd close your eyes and picture Mac DeMarco. I mean, the closest he came before is probably like Chamber of Reflections or something like that, but
I mean, he looks like in 30 years he will have morphed into C6 Steve, essentially. That is the aesthetic we're looking at. But now, you're probably right. I mean, I think it's his third record, This Old Dog. So it probably is just a kind of maturing approach, and he's a bit more confident and open, and I haven't given it a proper listen as yet. But yeah, looking forward to it. And maybe moving away from that kind of defensive thing of always doing it with a kind of a bit of a sense of irony, and just, yeah, this, I'm looking forward to this.
It should also be mentioned that in the past week we've had new music from Haim and from Paramore.
Yeah.
And I guess we talked about both bands in the preceding week, so it might be overkill. But I think both may be slightly reverting closer to type.
Yeah. I mean, for me, with Paramore, that means not a lot. I've just checked out.
That's exactly what I mean. Because that first, to be fair, that first single was a banger. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And then the second single, and I'm like, oh, no, I don't care.
Yeah, it turns out it was a bit of an attention grabber, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But Haim, I was much more, more excited to see what they do, obviously, because I'm a fan of those, and heartened by what I heard, because it is a fun song with proper hooks, and I was like, yes, this is what we're back to. And
we definitely needed that. It is in fact called Want You Back, which is suitable enough.
The minute I saw the name, I was like, oh, okay, we're just back on kind of safe ground. You just instantly think of, you know, Jackson 5 and kind of stuff like that. So I was like, yeah, cool, this will just be a kind of nice, pleasant, upbeat thing with killer hooks, and it was.
So we didn't really know what we were getting from the album this week, though, and it turns out we probably got a bit of everything. Gorillaz had already released 4 or 5 singles from the record before it dropped.
Yeah.
Turns out they had a lot more up their sleeve as well, as Humans hit the shelves. It sounded like this.
All the world is out of your hands. Another night. You got to die in bitter love. Something out the country fair is about to change its form.
Or I should say, that's what a tiny bit of the album sounds like. That is Let Me Out. It features Mavis Staples and Pusha T, in case you think we've singled out the one song with a feature. We would have actually had an easier job picking the one song that doesn't.
Yeah. This is, I think, as close as you're going to get to that classic Gorillaz thing of quite immersive trip-hop type stuff, and also paired with a great soul kind of vocal and, you know, always interesting rapper. But then it just spins off in so many directions. And this has always been... Okay, the thing with Gorillaz for me is that I never liked the conceit. Like, even back around the turn of the century, I was just thinking... I remember them doing interviews together and they were talking about, I mean, there's so much, you know, just disposable pop and put together manufactured bands. We just thought we'd make our own one that was interesting. And I just thought, oh, lads, really? And like, then the characters were just like weird cliches and the art looked kind of nice, but I just didn't want to know about the whole, like their backstory. There's a whole thing going on. Even now the videos look great, but I'm like, I just give me the music. And it's a testament, I think, to Damon Albarn's talent that I really like Gorillaz, sure, the music. So, I mean, the background for this album seems to be that, I mean, him and Jamie Hewlett, who does the whole kind of artistic side of things and famous from Tank Girl and a very well respected in his field bloke, seem to have a falling out around the time of Plastic Beach, or certainly the fall, which was essentially just Damon Albarn with his iPad putting something together, because there was a kind of very divergent thing. I mean, Damon was doing, he essentially got half the Clash together as a proper band, and Plastic Beach, which was kind of, I thought, unfairly maligned because there was some great stuff on that, didn't really stick too well to the format of like the Gorillaz thing.
I was about
thing.
To say that is probably the downfall of that album, and as well as not sticking to the format of Gorillaz, it probably stuck too closely to the format of what they wanted that record to be, which was a kind of a slightly doomsday concept-y album.
Yeah, I kind of loved it because it was more Damon just being like dropping his like 2D voice and that slacker thing and just doing proper Damon.
Oh, yeah, no, I quite like, enjoyed it as well.
But this now is very much the kind of reconciliation, and the kind of conceit is back to the forefront, and doesn't really interest me. And all of this is a very long-winded way to say the concept doesn't work for me because it's supposed to be about this band, but then you're instantly introduced to a load of guest stars and all of the songs sound nothing alike. And it just becomes, for me, it's just Damon Albarn hanging out with lots of his famous mates. And it becomes a kind of jammy thing. And this is a very long record, so it's a weird, playlisty, hard thing to kind of get a grip on.
I must say, for first listen, I absolutely agree. It did sound playlisty, and it did genuinely sound at times like it was a bit of a, you know, oh, I've always wanted to work with that person, and they're in town this weekend. Do we have any ideas? No. Doesn't matter. Get them down. Yeah. With time, I got my head around this a little bit more. Part of it is to realise, I think at least, that the fact that it is very disjointed is kind of just allegorical. Like it's meant to be chaotic. I mean, they've talked a lot about how this is their kind of post-Trump album and, you know, their kind of State of the Union address, basically. Yeah. And so I guess it makes sense if they're kind of drawing from turmoil. It came out a little bit jumbled like that. There is this concept here of, like, kind of going up the stories of a building or of a house.
Mm.
Which are punctuated by these bizarre little interludes.
And which don't work for me, really.
No.
I mean, there's a kind of, one of them is just that very old, like, I think it's a Monty Python joke where it's just like, yeah, the nonconformist oath, and it's just like a crowd being like, I will be individual, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we're getting a lot of that very on-the-nose type stuff. And then in the actual songs, there's that sense of we're in the end times. I mean, Damon's talked about this being like an end-of-the-world party. Which makes sense, but then you think, well, do you know what? Gorillaz have always been about that kind of end of the world, kind of very, take on modern things. And then you also think, well, if it's a kind of party playlist, I mean, David Albarn, has he ever enjoyed a party? Does he know what a party is?
Maybe if he was on very many drugs back in the day, who knows?
Yeah.
But like I say, I mean, like, they are intentionally trying to fuck with you. And like, there's no doubt about that when you hear like the closing tracks, which are Hallelujah Money, which we featured on the show before, featuring Benjamin Clementine. And it's really rather slow and haunting. And I think it's a bit of a dirge, to be perfectly honest. But that's by the by. And because that is contrasted then with We Got the Power, which is like this
with big Noel
chanting. Yeah, with Noel Gallagher singing backing vocals. Who'd have known? Jenny Beth, by the way, taking the kind of the star role on that song.
Yeah,
in case we focus too much on the backing vocals. But like those are absolutely chalk and cheese. They're basically designed to send you out just going, what the hell did I just listen to?
Yeah. They're kind of, you know, good examples of why I think this record doesn't quite work overall. And we will get to, you know, because it is such a talented songwriter, there's a lot to love on this. So even if I think it can be a bit of a mess. But the thing that doesn't work, it's not the disjointed nature of the tracks sitting together. It's sometimes the disjointed nature of the different layers of the tracks. So with Hallelujah Money, I actually think Benjamin puts in a hugely kind of theatrical, dramatic, very interesting performance. But then musically, it's just a bit flat. Do you know what I mean? Like it doesn't work quite.
I think that song is a bit rubbish.
I mean, we got The Power is a bit kind of like cheesy, despite some kind of knockout performances. And then you've stuff like, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about Moments with a Z, which is like, yeah, we have De La Soul, which is always, you know, going to be a great recipe when you have them with Gorillaz. And it's just a weird sounding. Like a lot of this, the synths sound very flat, and it's like a kind of, you know, robots in a factory buzz and drill thing.
It's a little bit droney, like.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like Time and Time Again. He doesn't quite, like, he's got people in, and even if they're doing interesting stuff in their own right, this time around, he doesn't quite know what to do with them. And he doesn't quite know what to do with himself, because I think the strongest, and this is just personal preference, strongest kind of Gorillaz songs are always when he is front and center.
Yeah.
And here he's just kind of floating, you know, somewhere in the ether, and he doesn't feel as central to the song.
He takes lead vocals on one track and one track only. I really wasn't joking when I said that we could pick one song that doesn't have a feature, which is called Busted and Blue, and the song sounds a bit like what the title would suggest. It's a downbeat.
See, I love this song.
Oh yeah, no, I do. I like it.
Yeah, like there's that run a bit from Andromeda then into this, and there's kind of probably about five or six songs, in fairness, where I'm like, okay, now we're on track.
Oh yeah,
about more than halfway into the record, and that all works for me. And it's kind of, I'm, you know, thrown back to On Melancholy Hill, and maybe I just want him to be doing Blur songs with a bit more kind of electronic and hip hop dressing. So maybe, you know.
Yeah,
I need to just move on with my life. And
I mean, yeah, it must be said that is a weird thing. Like when you're talking about the concept of Gorillaz, it's such a malleable thing, obviously.
Yeah. And there's always killer stuff on it. I mean, Deluxe Cheese My Collar. There's some
Cheese My Collar is a great song,
so good.
And like, I mean, it's buried towards the end of the album. And frankly, if you have had some sort of motion sickness by the time the 16th track rolls around, which is entirely conceivable. You're probably going to miss out on how strong some of the songs are, that they can just stand on their own, so to speak.
And Kali Uchis on that one in particular is just fantastic vocals. Like he works best, I think, when he has that really deep soulful thing that he can, because other times, while he clearly respects the artists, maybe it's not quite a genre, or he doesn't know what to do with a certain rap or a bit of grime that comes in here. Like he's very much trying to stay on trend. Not, I wouldn't say chasing trends, but it doesn't always come off, which is, you know, completely understandable with this kind of project. When it does, it's spectacular. But like, I think this is becoming a real Craig thing, but I'm just going to like take a knife to this, I think, in the end, and just make my own little mix of it. And it's like, I'm becoming this person, like the Father John Misty thing, where I was just like, just lose the last song. It's much better. And, you know, Kanye's album, I completely transformed for the better.
Yeah, I can totally see you doing that with this record. What's more, I can see this record making like maybe three or four great EPs. If it was split in the correct way.
Yeah, because then again, we do have that thing where there's the deluxe version, but, you know, it's Spotify, so it's all the same now.
Yeah, well, notably, you'll see that the deluxe version is basically where Damon Albarn has thrown all the non-Americans, because he wanted this to be Americans only on the features. And weirdly as well, he wanted to remove all intentional and clear references to Trump. He's mentioned this in a number of interviews since the album has kind of like, you know, hit the shelves, or at least since they've started talking about it, I guess.
Yeah.
Which seems like an odd choice to kind of make what is, broadly speaking, well, it's not broadly speaking, it is a concept album, and it is very much tied to the idea of the post-Trump world, and then deleting this concept.
Yeah, was it Pusha T that was talking about when he was working with Damon on this, you know, more than a year ago, mm-hmm. he had said to him, okay, the concept of this is imagine a post-Trump world. Yep. And Pusha T was like, that'll never happen.
Hell, man, my boy Vic Mensa told me about that back last July. And yeah, he hasn't made the cut on the record, presumably because his lyrics were too Trump.
Yeah, it's kind of understandable in terms of, I mean, if you know, you're thinking, okay, after 4 years, does this suddenly become the most dated thing if it's just right. referencing exactly what's happening now? But I do think it takes away a lot of the venom or a lot of the actual sense to the record.
Yeah,
you know
and
what
what's
I mean?
More as well, when
it
you're struggling,
a bit of a compromise. Yeah.
Yeah, but also when you're struggling for coherence,
yes,
you feel
yeah,
that's maybe
so.
A thread that can kind of run through it.
Yeah.
In terms of the individual performances along the way, Vince Staples, lead-off hitter, basically.
Yeah.
And does a very fine job.
Great. I really like that, yeah.
You can always expect that. Saturn's Bars features vocals from a guy called Popcorn.
Yeah.
This... In my eyes, and you've got relatives in the north side of Cork. Are you hearing this?
All my life, me ever have my gun, so me have to move sharp like me knife. All my life.
I know loads of people who speak
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, now you mention it.
What else do we have here? It. Grace Jones is on this record, mainly laughing.
I mean, that's one that kind of works because I don't think you can put Grace Jones on something and like, she's such a big presence.
Yeah.
She reminds me, like, her turn on this reminds me of Marky Smith, of all people, on Last of Me. Just in terms
of... That famous laughing Marky Smith.
Just in terms of, like, that, you know, announces herself and has this kind of, like, spectral quality hanging over the whole thing. It just, like, that Marky Smith thing where he was just like, where's North from here? It's, like, such a great moment.
It
like,
helps
she steals
that
the
for
show.
Me, she's coming in after probably the best song on the record, which yeah. is Submission.
Yeah.
Kalayla is...
Your boy, Danny Brown.
Yeah, but, like, Kalayla's getting a proper pop hook, of which there aren't too many on this record, but frankly there haven't been too many in her career, and it really really works for her. And then obviously Danny Brown coming in to do his thing.
Yeah, and that's like, maybe superb. That's another example though where it's like it's a good pop song, and then Danny Brown just drops in out of nowhere and he sounds like he's still like recording Atrocity Exhibition.
Oh yeah,
like, it
yeah,
doesn't
yeah.
really
I love
work
Danny, I love Danny Brown. There's no off switch.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
you're in his own
sounds like he'd be a terribly annoying person to spend a lot of time with. Like,
no. I think he's more relaxed off the mic.
Yeah, you'd hope. You'd hope so. Yeah. Who else? Mavis Staples, as we heard earlier. Anthony Hamilton, not the snooker player. I was disappointed to see, having watched the World Championships for a week. I was hoping it was going to be the man who's quite wonderfully nicknamed the Sheriff of Pottingham.
Oh, that is so English.
Yeah.
Were you really disappointed? Did you think that was going to happen?
No, I didn't.
No, you did not. No. So it's a real kind of mixed bag.
Yeah. I mean, like, there are absolute duds here as well, to be fair. Like, Sex Murder Party. I don't know what that is like. Not only do I not know what a sex murder party is, I don't know what the song is either.
Yeah, a strobe light doesn't really work for me.
And it's a pity because that comes so early as well, in between... Like Ascension, the aforementioned Saturn's Bars, Moments with De La Soul.
I feel like...
Then, like, after one interlude, you've got Submission, that, you know, fantastic song with Danny Brown and Kalayla. You've got the Grace Jones feature. It really is, yeah. If you could just...
If he had to just talk to me, I could have put all of this right.
You could have saved this.
I feel like this is my hidden talent, just making albums better. I should be consulted on all these things from now on. But yeah, it's... I'm not going to say a mixed opportunity because this is always going to get this with Gorillaz. So I'm not really, you know, my nose isn't too out of joint about the fact that this is what we got, because I was expecting a playlisty type thing. And there's enough here for me that I will keep returning to. So it's a win for me.
And the other thing that I will say is that this will get better the more you listen to it. I found that at least over the past week or 10 days. Is that the first time you listen to it, like I say, you will have whiplash jumping from one style to another, one song to another. Once you get over that and once you realise, okay, prepared, brace yourself, you start to recognise them for what they are, and there is a lot of quality in here. It is the scariest track listing in the world because they've separated the interludes. It looks like it's a 20-song album. It actually clocks in at around about 48, 49 minutes, so nothing to be too scared of. And yeah, for me,
I mean, ratings.
Yeah, by the end, I'm actually really enjoying this record. I would go 7.5, maybe 8.
Interesting. You see, I think as an album, I'm going to have to go like 6.5. But then there's so many 8.5 moments for me that it's almost like rating system doesn't work whatsoever.
It can't say that, Craig. Sacrilege.
I know it's scientific and all, but I'm going to go 7.8.
Have you had a chance to play anything else in the past week?
No way, man. Just been stuck on this because it was such a bloody head trip.
Yeah, it must be said, it is a head trip. And as well, it was too sunny outside to listen to anything too deep. I literally went halfway through the new Kasabian album, which has dropped by the time this podcast is released.
Yeah.
And literally got halfway through it and I was like, this is way, way too warm outside to be listening to Kasabian.
Yeah, I mean, that's waiting for me and I'm a bit scared it's going to blow the roof off my house.
It'll make your face melt, my friend. Hopefully, Dave will be here to help you put it back together again.
Do you reckon
he'll
come back? Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
I mean, yeah, we'll probably keep people on.
Be a strange way to leave it.
It would be very odd. Shall we leave it with some exit music?
We shall.
I didn't get to do the intro, so I'm going to do the exit music.
Please, sign us out.
How would you fancy some atmospheric ambient folk? Does that sound good?
Sounds good to me.
All right, so it's a Dublin-based trio, Pine the Pilcrow. And I think we're both fans of this, right? Like, this is suitable, yeah. Like, really good kind of closing credits music. It's going to take you on a bit of a journey. Dahlia is the song. It's the first one from their second EP. Their first EP came out last year, got great reviews. Everyone thinks they're doing some wonderful stuff, which they are. Kind of come from classical background, trad background, but it comes together in this really kind of cinematic effect of thing. They're doing a big push for the EP, so lots of June dates. If you go to @PineThePilcrow, you'll find all the deets. But the big one is the Civic Theatre in Tala on June the 24th. So get to that. But ahead of that, one of their songs, Dahlia, to play us out. And I suppose I should sign us off with our classic line. My name is Craig Fitzpatrick. There has been an encore.
You alone let me in. This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Groovy.